Welcome to this afternoon's session on engaging supporters in a remotely connected world. My name's Alice Roche. I'm the head of operations here at Charity Digital. So I look after our customer service, our product sales, our e-commerce and growth. So this is Alan Pastrello, who is the co-founder and director of Trillium. And this is Declan Hunt, who is a consultant at ClearCourse. And they're going to be the speakers for this afternoon's session. So just a reminder, when submitting questions through the app, you can go to the agenda page on the app, select the session that we're in right now, which is engaging supporters in a remotely connected world, and then click view details and submit your questions through the Q&A box. We'll have about 10 minutes at the end for questions, and if you're struggling with the app, I can come to you with a mic. Enjoy the session, and I will speak to you afterwards.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hi, my name's Alan Declan, who's both a customer and a consultant to us now as well. So thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. And it was a very open-ended topic. So we've applied a bit of a particular slant on it. And as we go through the talk, hopefully we'll generate some thoughts in your mind and start thinking about some questions. And what we really want out of these sessions is the opportunity to engage with you a little bit more, and so that we can learn, but also that ultimately what we want to do is drive some change, positive change, hopefully using some digital tools and technologies. So kind of covered most of that. I think the real kind of key point there is about the driving the change piece. So a little bit about Trillium. We don't like to make these talks too much about us, but it helps inform where we come from and what our thinking is. So at Trillium, we use a tagline called Experience Matters. And Experience Matters is really multifaceted. That could be your experience in terms of working with us as a provider and a partner. It could also be our use of an experience of using the technologies. A lot of it is about user experience, which is something that's really important to us. I think a lot of people see us as being a traditional CRM provider, and that's something that we do, but we're also a digital provider, and we also pay a lot of attention to user experience, which is really important to us. But then also our experience of the technology and experience within the sector as well come into that statement. So a little bit about what we do. We are an integrated provider. So we provide CRM tools, marketing automation tools, the strategy that unifies them, and the websites and the donor pages as well that integrates them. Because we're part of a broader group, we also do a lot of integrated payment capability. So we have our own payment gateway, and we do our own direct debit processing. So everything can be done in one place with one strategy and one way of tackling the challenges that you have to solve. That's a selection of clients. Some of them are going to be in the room. I actually saw a few clients in the panel conversation earlier, which was great. But we are active in both the membership and the charity space. So there are some organizations that have our memberships and also have a large number of benevolent funds or fundraising capability in their membership bodies. We also have a number of charity clients who have a membership capability and some that just have either. So really talking about today, what we wanted to do was really just kind of answer this question. This was the question that was given to us by Charity Digital, and I think they wanted us to answer, you know, how can charities build lasting relationships in a hybrid world? And so we hosted a roundtable discussion earlier on a similar thread to this topic, and it was really interesting to see what came out of that. The main takeaway that I took from that was we were expecting a lot more negative challenges, kind of talking about how a hybrid world has impacted both our ability to work together as a team, but also how we engage with our donors and our volunteers. But actually, there was some really interesting, great case studies that came out of that, talking about how it can actually be really enabler. And I think that's the consequence of us now coming through this hybrid working way and us finding the ways that work for us as organizations and individuals as well. So let's talk about the challenge before we talk about the solutions. So the first challenge really is, from our perspective, and this is a bit of a challenging topic for me. I'm actually one of the few people in the world who thinks that GDPR was a great thing. I actually think it's helped us because I think it's shown us the value of data and our data assets. We've kind of had to pay more attention to it, and yes, it was quite challenging and hard to get our heads around it, but we now generally pay more attention to data and we don't take it for granted. We value it and we treat it with care, and we treat it with care not just because the ICO tell us to, or they'll fine us. But I honestly believe that as a sector, we care about it because we know that our donors and our benefactors care about effective use of their privacy and their data. So that's a really important piece that I think is there. However, it does cause us in a sector a specific set of challenges, right? So it's not lost on us all that being able to manage these various data points in a GDPR compliant way does cause some challenges. And specifically, I think within the sector, we've seen a kind of over the past few years, people kind of backing away from using some of the more digital tools, an increase in sort of TV advertising and mass advertising ways to kind of say, well, you know, we still need to reach those donors. But we do think that there's an opportunity to continue using a lot more digital tools in a GDPR compliant way to bring that data back. The second one we wanted to talk about is kind of the volume of people and where different people are engaging. And this is kind of really identifying a potential gap and just in terms of different audiences and how they're engaging. So on the one hand, we've got a downward trend in the number of people in the younger age categories who are actually committing to donating. But in other parts, and we'll talk about this later in future slides, we can see that actually they have a greater propensity. So it tells me there's a bit of a gap. We need to understand why that gap's developing and what we can do about it. Linked to the previous points around data and control of that data, people in older age groups are starting to get more concerned about data. So they're starting to back off a little bit as well. But again, we'll identify what the opportunities are. So Declan's, I asked Declan to join me on the chat because Declan's got a different perspective on things. He's both an ex-client and helps us and as a consultant. Declan's role was a CIO for a large charity, Macmillan. And so that's a big charity looking at multiple ways of doing things and specifically how IT was used. Declan, your thoughts on big challenges?
Thanks, Alan, and great to be up here today. A little bit nerve-wracking to be up, but nice to see you all. I spent 7 years as the CIO or technology director of Macmillan, and since then I've worked for the Royal British Legion, Chartered Institute of Fundraising, and currently helping with the digital transformation at the Ramblers Association. So I've been around charities and fundraising and this subject for about 8-9 years. I think one of the things that happened, I joined Macmillan in 2015, responsible for technology and digital. And the first thing that was going through at that time was a series of big news events in the media, one around a lady in the Bristol area who'd received 3,000 requests for donations in 1 year. And that drove a lot of regulation about opt-in, opt-out. There's also, you know, as we see here, the level of trust, but also within the charities, one of the big things that I've seen and we were working on at Macmillan is around diversity and inclusion. And that's not just around diversity within the workforce, but actually diversity about who your beneficiaries are and people feeling from diverse backgrounds that charities really are there for them. Great. Thanks, Alan. And this, you know, everyone knows about this, and I'm not going to labour this because everyone knows about the cost of living crisis. There's just a couple of things to see here. I know that it's impacting charities and income now, but history suggests that the impact on charities is not necessarily as significant in terms of donations, and this is from the last two recessions as it is in other sectors. But equally, we know people are going through financial hardship. We know people are having to work much harder. That will affect their ability to engage, perhaps, but also charities that provide support for people who are, you know, going through financial challenge or food. They're seeing significant demand. So there's a lot of challenge around. And really, I suppose at this stage, we've talked a lot about the challenge. We want to talk about actually what are the opportunities and what digital and data can do. So there's always something in there, and I think there's a couple of things I just wanted to pick out. Things will happen in digital and technology, and you can't control it. So you're not going to in any way be able to influence what Facebook do or any of the large technology organizations. And there are organizations that are evolving today. There are organizations that haven't even started yet that you'll be using their technology in a few years' time and that will have an effect on what you do. So worrying about the macroeconomics of it and the larger challenges is not necessarily going to help. How you react to it is the important thing. So when we think about some of the challenges that that we've had, Alan talked about regulation. We've seen a move away from cash and cash donations. That's going to continue. Now, cash is anonymous, and it's quite hard to have a relationship with somebody that's anonymous. But equally, when people gave cash, there was sometimes a relationship. There was a personal relationship with the individual who gave the money. Actually, if you take it now to digital donations, you actually get information about the person. You've got the opportunity to contact them in a lot of cases, but certainly you get some information about the person that's useful. And that's an important thing that you can then build upon. So this, I talk about and what that gives you is the opportunity to thank. So this is actually a real text message that one of my friends got in Ireland. And it's an example of how fragmentation across multiple platforms is possible to have a good donor journey. So this is actually if you give blood in Ireland. So this is my friend Fabian, who gave blood at the end of January. Towards the end of January, and he received this text message about a week after to say that the blood that he had donated had been administered in St. James's Hospital about a week after. So if you think about the, and donor is like, I know it's a blood donation, but if you think about the journey that somebody had, they registered, they went for an event, there was an external system, which is another hospital somewhere in the country, sent something back. But what it created was a very personalized thank you and an engagement that says, you should feel good about what you've done and share about the good that you've done. And I think that's what digital and data gives you as part of the evolution of fundraising and donations. And I think if you don't have a really strong relationship with data and the love of data, it's a relationship I suggest that you start nurturing now. So transparency and that getting into that virtuous cycle is something that we worked a lot on in Macmillan and in other organizations. So getting people to donate and engaging with a supporter, having something after that and an accurate thank you. And the thank you can be, thanks for what you've done, here's the impact that it's had. And actually keeping information about that person to say, is there another ask we could have? And it's not necessarily a financial ask. But it's an ask for someone to provide support. You may want them to become an advocate. You may want somebody to volunteer. But if you have information about that person, and they're happy for you to have that and to share it, and you know, for example, where they live, you might have something like a local volunteering project that you'd say, I'll go to that person to do it. Now, I know a lot of you are doing that, but actually that's the opportunity that digital and data gives you. The big challenge that I faced and I know organizations face and some of my CIO peers face is how you integrate all of that together. And that's one of the tricks and one of the challenges. And it's something that you'll definitely have to do. So having a view that you'll have one single platform is from my experience not necessarily going to happen, because if you take donations, there are I think Enthuse are here, you've got Committed Giving, you've got donation platforms that actually work and work really well that you'll have to work with. You've got Just Giving, you've got Facebook Donate, you've got all sorts of platforms out there that you'll need to engage with, but aggregation of data is critical. Talked a little bit about aggregation of data and personalization. And one of the things that I hear a lot is having a single version of the truth. I'm probably controversial with a lot of people and some people disagree. I don't think you need a single version of the truth. I think you need a series of versions of the truth. You don't need to know everything about everyone in one place. You need to know the information that's relevant to certain personas. And the research we did, for example, at Macmillan bore some of this out. So if you think about Macmillan as an organization, raises £240 million a year through fundraising. The analysis that we did there, which probably wasn't published outside of it, but we'll use it here anyway. But the people, the beneficiaries are people living with cancer. They're actually not necessarily the people that donate. They make up about 10% of the people that donate. It's the people that are affected by it. So the family and friends, they make up 80%. And about 5% is in the other category. So having a single version of the truth won't allow you to aggregate people who are living with cancer. You can't ask them who their family are. You're not going to ask them, and you don't need to know that anyway. So actually, good marketing, good engagement, a good experience, and people having an affinity with your brand and your cause is what will make people engage. You then have the opportunity to give them a great experience and keep in touch with them through data analytics. And appropriate asks for not necessarily always money. That's the thing that will really help.
So one of the other things, and I think following on from what Declan was just saying, is if you do have those multiple sources of truth or the single source of truth or the versions of the truth, then ultimately what you have at your disposal is data. And I think if we're really honest about it, we have an almost infinite pool of data that we could call on. And whilst we need to do all the things that I spoke about earlier and treat it with respect and honour it and make sure that we're safeguarding that data, I think that we generally as a sector have a really good ability to collect, to analyse and to utilise that data to improve those experiences. So through the use of being able to collect the data, make sure that you're collecting data with a purpose, and then to be able to really analyze and understand that data allows you to go beyond just knowing whether they're a donor or a volunteer, but trying to actually understand what motivates them. And if you can understand what motivates them, you can craft more effective marketing and communication and outreach messages, improve your engagement, and that will ultimately generate a better virtuous circle of fundraising, advocacy, and they will then go out and they will do those things that get them to participate in that. So I think if you can close that loop a little bit better, then you're in a better position. Kind of counter to what Declan was saying. Sorry, the floor's really creaky here. But is really kind of understanding the impact of too much data fragmentation. So one of the challenges that we see is that customers will say, we'd like to see that single source of truth because we want to achieve better outreach and campaign management. How do we do that? But we've got all these, lots of different systems. Data fragmentation is going to happen in this sector. It's a consequence of the fact that a lot of these very effective fundraising and volunteering platforms are not part of your ecosystem. The trick there is then to understand how you're going to aggregate that data to create a better single view of your donors, right? Because once you do that, you can do more effective segmentation, more effective targeting, and then feed that back into your systems to know what works and doesn't work. I have a little mantra that is, if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. And I think as a sector, we're actually generally very good at using data, and there are some very good people in the industry as well. I think I saw some people with Data for Good t-shirts on. Might be someone in the front hero here. But is that ability to use data more effectively is really a currency for us in this industry. And really, you should be trying to think about how can you bring your data together with a purpose. And that purpose should be to close off that circle and understand your donors, your fundraisers, your volunteers, your stakeholders. It might be if you're a grant applicant, apply for a lot of grants, understanding the organizations, what motivates them, and then using that data to craft a better experience for the people you're reaching out to. So kind of looking at the next one, this is where we really do start to look at some data. I spoke about this kind of gap that's developing and changing different demographics, and I do need to just look at the stats here. We know that we've got the ability for millennials to engage more if they're engaging on their terms. Right, and so their terms means on communication channels and devices that they're actually more in tune with. It works more for the way they want to engage. They want to engage in a more digital channel, but it isn't just portraying the same message via the different digital channel. It has to be adapted to make it more kind of relevant to them. I come from an old advertising background, and there was a great guy, I think his name was Broadbent, who said, the message is the medium and the medium is also the message. A great example of this is is if you took a radio ad and you played it in a cinema, it would have far less impact than you took if you had an advert that was specifically crafted for the cinema, right? So then you leverage the medium at your disposal. You use bigger imagery. You can use sound. You can convey emotion that you couldn't do via the radio. You also won't get the same reach by just trying to put to target advertising in a cinema. And I think what we've lost in kind of a very immediate, fairly transactional world in terms of how we now promote and advertise things via social media channels is we've lost that understanding about how this medium can be used. And I think millennials really have grasped that. So is your content that you're using shareable? Can you use it to pass it on? Because one of the great things about millennials is that when they're engaged in something, they want to bring lots of people with them. They want to become influencers themselves. And so how can we harness that and get them to introduce us to a wider circle of people who are probably interested in the same cause, right? So data and social media and those new channels give us that capability we probably never had before. How do we harness it? We are going to have to accept that aggregation of the data is a challenge, but bringing it into that one place that you can craft those campaigns, that's really the holy grail. Interesting stat. I was really surprised by this. I bought a VR headset. Yes, I am a geek, I know. But I bought a VR headset about 6 years ago. I was an early adopter. I was like, eh, it's actually not that interesting. And I figured, you know what? It's going to die a death. We look at Facebook and Meta and yeah, it's not really going anywhere. Interesting stat. 56% of 16 to 26 year olds are interested in doing an online volunteering event via VR. Who knew? I certainly didn't. Someone bothered to ask them. They said, yeah, of course we would. That's interesting. That's new tech. That's stuff we'd like to do. Now, Dot's advising everybody in the room to rush out and go buy VR headsets and start putting your campaigns into VR testing rooms. But I do think it shows that if we ask the right questions via the right channels to the right audiences, they'll give us the answers we want. And that data is at our disposal. We just have to go looking for it. On the opposite end, we have boomers, right, who are... just going back to this one. We still have boomers, right, who are completely the opposite. I think about my father as well, semi-retired. He will waste a ton of time on Facebook, an inordinate amount of time. Not only that, though, he will share things with greater ease than I have ever shared on anything with Facebook. Doesn't have a care about his data, not interested in what happens about it, because he doesn't understand UTM tracking codes, doesn't understand that we can see all the things that he's forwarding. We should be leveraging that, right, in a respectful GDPR-compliant fashion. Change. I think change is an inevitable reality of where we are, and how we can harness that change. One that's really interesting to me is online volunteering. Thanks to kind of the result of being in a hybrid world, volunteering seems to have changed a lot, right? So we now have the ability to do more volunteering in both an in-person and an online manner. If we can bring that data back and understand who those people are in our CRMs, we can do better outreach campaigns to bring those volunteers back into the fold. I think in the roundtable discussion we were talking about earlier, there were some really interesting perspectives from different parts of the room about how volunteering had either dropped off a cliff and they're struggling to get them back, or in other places, they're doing great things with volunteering. The difference is, in that particular instance, for that particular charity and that particular audience, it's more relevant to do things in an online manner. For a different charity, it's not. So again, going back to the message is the medium is the message, and figure out what works for you, and you've got that data, you probably just need to segment it and understand how you reach out to those people. So how do you make it happen? We won't kind of talk through all of these. There's a selection up there on screen. I think that we've got the opportunity with a lot of the tech at our disposal to be able to do these things. But the one thing that we probably lack is actually a unifying strategy. So this is something that I see quite often, is that we'll see people sort of, you know, have access to certain technology, or they'll see what other people in other sectors are doing, and they'll say, right, I want to do the same thing. And we see technology driving the strategy. Really what's got to happen is we've got to understand the strategy. The technology is out there, but we need better engagement with the strategy and to understand what you need to do as an organization, and then use the technology in a way to drive things. We can test things, we can change our minds, we can go back, but we do need to have a strategy. And I do think sometimes we're being led too much by technology rather than the strategy. So that's my one piece of advice on that piece. The other one is proliferation of different technologies will continue. So one thing about the rate of change, it will continue to increase rather than slow down. So when you're thinking about new technologies and systems around things like your CRM or anything like that, think about how can it be future-proof. You're going to have to have it interact and engage with technologies that we don't even know exist yet. Right. 2 years ago, we would have said, yes, AI, we know it's going to be a big thing. It's really interesting. And then suddenly, in the past 6 months, one technology, ChatGPT, suddenly opens up everybody's eyes to the available use of this technology. And now we're seeing disruption. And for some people, disruption is good. And for some people, disruption is bad. I would encourage everybody to think about how you can harness disruption in the most positive sense. Disruption for the sake of disruption is just disruption. Right. So think about how you can harness it and what tech you're using to consolidate and bring that picture together to further enhance your strategy. So a couple of things we'd kind of suggest doing here is kind of stepping away from, or stepping out from behind the curtain, is really kind of looking at what you can do to remove the anonymity and ambiguity in your data and how you're engaging with your donors. And really using that to build trust with your supporter base. Because I think ultimately that's what it comes down to. If you can get that trust, then you can complete a more virtuous circle. You will get more back from people. Number two, recognize that knowledge is power, right? This technology is there. Don't overinvest in lots of crazy things, but harness it. Don't be scared to harness it, because actually I think the people in your audiences are already harnessing it. Right. So it's our job to make sure that we can still engage with them in the message and the medium that they want to. So right channel, right time, right message.
Great. And thank you, Alan. And just finally, I just urge you all to kind of embrace that digital future. It's not just here now, but it's going to evolve. There are so many platforms out there that need to be integrated. And it's actually how you react to that is the important thing. And just to give you two examples from my own career, for those of you who've got, you know, a mobile device, an iPad or whatever it is, you've got, you know, to bring your own device. I and all of my peers when I was in, you know, a CIO was, how do we stop that? We're actually, the question we should have asked ourselves, because you look at the opportunity that it brings to all of you. You don't go into an email mountain tomorrow. You can have flexible working. It made the pandemic so much smoother for people that we had that flexibility. Clearly, we wouldn't have seen the pandemic. But actually, if we'd have looked at it differently and said, here's an opportunity, rather than how do we shut this off and stop it from happening? And the second one is an example from when I was in a large charity. Facebook Donate, the finance function, sorry if any finance people in the room, but the finance function were saying, we don't want to do it because we don't know how to reconcile it. So somehow it accidentally got turned on. And when the volume of income came in, there was no stopping it. Nobody was going to turn it off. And actually, we should have looked at it and said, how do we make this work? Rather than how, oh, it was hard to reconcile. We're not sure what's the implication of this. Actually, how do we work it? So I just say, embrace what it looks like. You don't have to go after everything, but there are lots of platforms out there. You know, there are gaming platforms now that you can use, that people will help fundraise. There's lots of opportunity. So embrace them. And if you approach them with that, what's the opportunity, and an open mind, I'm sure you'll continue to be successful. So thank you very much for listening to Alan and I today. I hope that was useful, and we'll take any questions.
So we've had one saying, we don't have any specific data analysis skills or resources, but we are collecting data. Where should we start in upskilling?
I'll take this one. I think I think if you're hiring people of any description in any part of your organization, I think asking the question, you know, what's your experience with data? And that can be from finance, it can be from marketing. You don't have to have data skills in a department. If you're in a big organization, then you will have people in IT or in different parts of the business that have skills. I think data should be as ubiquitous. The ability to build a dashboard, in my opinion, should be as ubiquitous as the ability to open up Word or Excel, right? And actually, there's a lot of skill there in the ability to do it, provided you're cautious with the data and you know what you're doing. So it'd be interesting to speak to the person who raised that question, because I think there's a lot of skills that you could do. My experience is, if you find younger people in your organization, they've probably got a better grasp of the tools and the data and what can be achieved than we do. So I have a guy, and Declan knows, he sort of literally sits to the right of me. It astounds me that I can give him a challenge to say, I really need to find this piece of data. He's not a data scientist. He's not classically trained. He's not even regard himself as an IT person. But he does have 20 years on me. And that means that he will do it with far greater accuracy and speed. He'll Google it. He'll figure it out. In fact, he uses ChatGPT to figure out how to do most of it, right? So just look for those people, give them the challenge, and you'll be amazed at, you'll find loads of people in your organization who are actually really good at this. And then build on it, upskill them. You know, there are lots of courses, lots of tools. YouTube is an excellent resource for getting people to understand data a little bit more.
Your thoughts?
I think the one thing I'd say is find some one challenge you've got that you think, I wonder what happens. So where we started in Macmillan was a huge, you know, digital estate. We said, where do we start with our digital transformation? We said, well, okay, let's rank where people go on the site. And this is, I know this is really obvious, but this took quite a long time to get to. Let's rank them in the order of people use. So we realized that the top four cancers account for 54% of the traffic for information support. Therefore, do those four first, that's half the people, and then work out, get that working correctly, and then all the others will follow. There's another 196 to do, but actually four were that. So there's some things you just look at and go, yeah, let's just do that first, and then build from there.
Thank you. That's really great. We also have a colleague that uses ChatGPT, and he's the same. Yeah, not classically trained, but yeah, he's really interested in that. And we've been using it recently to answer many questions. So another one is, what are the most important metrics that we should measure?
Don't want to take the first part of that. If I think about from a digital perspective, are people getting to the end of the journey that you know that they want? So if you've got a piece of information on your website that takes two or three pages to get to, are they getting to the end? Are they getting to the bottom of that? And actually, just to give you a real life example, applying for benefits is now online with the DWP, and it's quite complicated. And there are organizations like Macmillan or Age UK who've got it on their website and integrated. It's actually really complicated, and having a person interject at the right time to say, do you want some help at this point, was an important thing for us. So that was that's an example of where we looked at. But the first thing was, are people getting to the end of the journey? That's where I would start, and then say, if I'm answering their question, that's a good thing. And if they're getting to the end of the journey and then they're going somewhere else, what am I not giving them that's making them go somewhere else?
Mine's maybe a little bit more kind of conceptual, but is the most important metrics to measure are the ones that are going to help you achieve your strategy. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have those metrics, then you can start coming up with a plan for how do we measure it, right? So different metrics will be for different organizations. I know we're all in the charity sector, but there is such a diversity and different ways of treating them. So I think different metrics for different organizations. I do agree with what Declan's saying, is they just find the ones that are the most important for people to complete the journey they came to you, right? So if people are engaging with you digitally for whatever reason, do use things like Google Analytics, test, understand, and look at what's going wrong there. And you have a really, I wouldn't say luxurious, but you have a good position in terms of in how you're seen, in terms of how you engage with people. I don't really want to tell my energy supplier anything about me, because I don't think they care about me, right? But you're in the charity sector. So if you ask people, what did you think of that journey? How would we improve it? You will get an honest answer. And we should be leveraging more of that by being open and transparent with people and saying, hey, we'd like to improve it. What do you think? And I think you'll get a better response to those things.
Excellent, thank you. And then our last one, as we are nearing time for the break, is what are your three top tips to understanding your audience better?
Ooh, that's a challenging one. Top tips. Understanding them, I think first, you know, have the data. So that will be number one, right? And then I think craft some test scenarios that you can actually test. Whatever it might be, you know, and don't be afraid to test something. So if you're doing an email campaign, it could be as simple as doing an A-B split test, right? And then just test and then iterate. And don't assume that you ever have the answer, right? Because what will happen is you'll do something, you'll figure out that it does work. And then the trick is not to stop continuing to test and find refinement. There's a great exercise a colleague of mine used to do years ago. And he put up screenshots. It's really interesting. You can do this with Wayback Machine. For those of you who know Wayback Machine, it's a website that allows you to go back. It's really interesting. Do this. Take a date, today's date, and go back 10 years on the Google homepage. On the Amazon homepage. And just note how it's gradually drifted. If you turned it into an animated GIF, you'd be like, oh, actually, it's been very subtle. But they tweak that thing every month in subtle little ways based on data. And let's be honest, it clearly works, right? Because who doesn't use that wonderful, amazing thing? Right? So that's my top.
So just to add on to that, I think one of the things I would definitely say is ask others what they're doing, because I worked most of my career in the commercial sector and competition is there and people don't share. I haven't found that in the third sector. In fact, I found the complete opposite. So just ask somebody, whether you know them or not, you know, the opportunity to meet somebody here today, or you can find me on LinkedIn and say, I've got this, do you know somebody who would help with this? Just reach out to somebody, because no one in any of the organizations I've worked in, if they got just an unsolicited question from somebody who wanted to find out what they're doing, is going to say, no, I've not come across that. So I would say, make sure you reach out and just ask somebody. And the worst thing they'll do is ignore you or say no. But I haven't come across that yet. And I'm not afraid to ask as a person. So.
Yeah, the worst thing that can happen is they say no. So, yeah.
which I won't if you send me a question.
Oh, that's really good to know. Thank you so much. Thank you to both of our speakers there.